Wallawani, welcome to Earth Matters, environment social justice stories from Australia and around the world, produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country in Naam, Melbourne, and broadcast across this continent via the Community Radio Network.
I'm very happy to bring you another Women's Climate Conversation. Hosted by the co-founder of the Women's Climate Congress, Janet Salisbury, this conversation from June 2025 looks at ways to bring compassion into politics.
I pay my deep respects to elders past, present and emerging, and have great gratitude for the custodianship of the land that First Nations people have shown over many millennia. Our theme for this event today is Compassion and Kindness in Government, a Gateway to Wise Action on Climate Change and Other Challenges. And we have three wonderful guests to share their knowledge, who I will be introducing you to shortly. But to bring you into the space, I'm going to play a short song written by my friend Johanna McBride, which is called Ubuntu. Because of each other. It's a beautiful African philosophy. It teaches us that we're all interconnected. Nelson Mandela drew on this philosophy for the truth and reconciliation process in South Africa after the end of apartheid. For the next hour, we'll explore together how to take that deep sense of relationship with each other and the earth into our halls of power to embrace a new style of politics that ultimately pulls us together for the common good. In the Women's Climate Congress commitment statements, we say qualities of the heart, including compassion, love, empathy, and forgiveness, are the basis of true strength and necessary for our survival. These principles are also reflected in our Women's Climate Congress Charter for Change. I've asked Kelly to read Action 6 from the Charter.
Action 6, Actions for Long-Term Human and Planetary Wellbeing. Elevate compassion and kindness in government. We propose that qualities of the heart, such as compassion, love, kindness, empathy, forgiveness, are the basis of true strength and decision-making. These qualities can be respected, elevated, and applied in government. Qualities of the heart create stronger connections between people, improve collaboration, and increase trust. Such qualities are also associated with the practice of truth, transparency, and integrity, putting the common good ahead of personal gain. Movements elsewhere are promoting a strategic approach to compassion-informed policy as the driver of overall well-being. For example, the Compassion in Politics movement in the UK and the Charter for Compassion Australia. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. If this is your first contact that you've had with the Women's Climate Congress, I urge you to go and have a look at it there in the full charter, which we created from conversations with thousands of women around Australia. So in the election campaign, Anthony Albanese said that kindness is a strength. This was picked up by the media as being sort of an unusual thing for a politician to say. It wasn't unusual to us. We've been talking about that for a long time, as you can hear. And then Jacinda Ardern was interviewed on the 7:30 report ahead of a publication of hers. It's an autobiographical memoir of her time in New Zealand politics. And she, of course, talks about this as well. So these ideas are out there. They're in the zeitgeist, if you like. So how can we harness this in the newly elected 48th Parliament in Australia and really challenge the status quo, which still favours the notion that strength can be found in adversarial opposition and standover tactics and bullying sometimes? This brings me to our three guest conversationalists for tonight. And we're really delighted to have with us Jennifer Nadel, who's joining us from London, Chloe Spackman, who's based in Sydney, and Kate Chaney, MP, who's gone the way back to her electorate in Perth. So, Jennifer Nadel, FRSA, and that means Fellow of the Royal Society of Arts. You're a barrister, a political advisor, an award-winning television journalist. So you've had your fair share of adversarial debate and public discourse along the way, but along the way you've made this transition to become a passionate champion for compassion and empathy. And among many of your initiatives, you've co-founded a cross-party think tank in the UK Parliament called Compassion in Politics. You also have hosted a BBC radio documentary, Broken Politics, Broken Politicians, which explores the impact that our political system has on politicians. I'd just like you to introduce yourself a little bit more and tell us about particularly the Compassion in Politics movement in the UK, which I think you're planning to bring to Australia as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Janet. And it's lovely to be with you all. And I found that moving so powerful because Ubuntu is a word that we often use as a proxy for compassion. It's a recognition of the interconnection of all of us and of all the issues that we face. And our politics at the moment is not working. It's not working because we are facing, for many reasons, inequality and the existential crises that we face as a globe, interlocking, and primarily, of course, climate. And we set up Compassion in Politics really to try and foster a different way of doing politics that embedded compassion at its root. All of the issues that we care about have the same underlying connection, which is if there was sufficient compassion, we would tackle them all. Politics is about choices. We've signed the SDGs, the UN Sustainable Development Goals. We know that there are answers, and yet we as a world and our politicians and our leaders have not been able to enact those answers. So what can we change in the way we do politics to enable the answers that do exist to be enacted and support those politicians who are trying to do the right thing? So we look at the adversarial nature of politics, the conflict-based nature. We work a lot with psychologists. Unfortunately, we kindly gifted you the Westminster model of politics, which is based on conflict. It's adversarial. It's binary. It's winner takes all. It promotes competition and tribalism. It doesn't promote the things that we need most right now, which is cooperation and collaboration. So we look at ways to reform that model. And we also look at the policies that come out of it. So we work to try and bring in an intergenerational law which would ensure fairness, which is another way of tackling climate. You know, if we make decisions now, they're going to adversely impact the generations to come. That can't be okay. So we look at how we can embed intergenerational fairness and also a duty to ensure that everyone has what they need to thrive. You know, politics should be about care and concern and trying to ensure that every citizen can thrive. But in our highly polarised political system, and now, of course, we see how vulnerable it is to the rise of the far right. We see how vulnerable it is to disinformation. So I'm sure we'll talk about it later. I don't want to take up too much time at this point. But just to say that that's another area, you know, our democracy is fragile. Trust in politics is at an all-time low. And so this is the moment to try and change politics for good.
Thank you, Jennifer. So I'm going to turn now to Chloe. Chloe is the CEO of an organisation here in Australia, and she's the CEO of an organisation called Next 25, which is an independent think tank, think and do tank, actually, in Australia, promoting constructive public discourse around challenging issues. Over the past few years, you've been developing a very innovative program for women in Parliament called Improving Democracy, Transforming Parliament for Women. So I'd like you to tell us a bit about Next 25 generally, and also about this program that you've been running with the Women in Parliament.
Yeah, thank you so much, Janet. So Next 25 is on a mission to ensure that Australia has what it takes to make the future its people want. And we do this by answering three key research questions. So what is the future Australia wants? Are we on track to that future? And if not, what are the deep contributing factors for our underperformance? And what are some levers that we can pull to shift them? And then we build initiatives based on those levers that we've discovered through our research. And our research, so mainly through our RECODED program, uncovered five systemic levers, or what we could also call major opportunities to improve Australia's performance towards a long-term flourishing future. And these are a galvanising national identity, benchmarks beyond GDP, constructive discussion, engaged decision-making, and trust in government. And so currently, as Janet mentioned, we're a think and do tank. So the two areas that we're working on initiatives in our do tank respond to the trust in government and to the constructive discussion levers. And unsurprisingly, the two are very interconnected. So we're working at a systemic level to create the conditions for Australia to have this flourishing future. And in our do tank, we are now in our 10th year of offering values-based leadership support to Australian state, territory and federal MPs. And this is the work that birthed our newer bespoke program, Improving Democracy, Transforming Parliament for Women, which started in 2022. And these programs are all about supporting MPs to restore trust in government. And a key tenet of these programs, particularly our Transforming Parliament for Women program, is compassion for self and compassion for others. So our programs are about transforming self to transform system. And in our programs, we build a safe container for MPs to come together across party lines and reconnect with their values and their vision for entering politics in the first place, and to work on transforming the system with the support of their colleagues across party lines. So, of course, we want to have a robust debate in our parliaments and in our democracy, but we want it to be about the things that really matter and not about attacking or tearing down individuals in a way that, one, is just providing media fodder and a distraction from the really complex challenges we face, and two, would be unacceptable in any other contemporary workplace. But the institution of politics, the system of it, as Jennifer mentioned, it's very resilient. And so what we hear from a lot of MPs who join our programs is that they're so deeply dissatisfied with the system that they operate in, and they want to work in a constructive, values-based way, but they feel constrained by that system, or really, you know, systems within systems that they operate in. So that's why, off the back of, we had the Federal Jenkins report and the New South Wales Broderick report, and I feel that most of Australian parliaments have had some kind of review into toxic workplace cultures. We worked with four New South Wales MPs, so one Labor, one Liberal, one Green and one Independent, to co-create this initiative, Transforming Parliament for Women. We now have over 30% of women in New South Wales Parliament as alumni of the program. So women from right across the political spectrum working together to transform New South Wales Parliament for the participation and flourishing of women. And this year we expanded the program nationwide, bringing together women across all three levels of parliament, and from, I think we had four states, two territories involved in that nationwide program. So we meet with the women who've taken part in these programs at regular intervals, and we provide a safe space and process for them to work through prototypes that they've co-designed, various ways to transform parliament. But most importantly, it's their relationships that have been transformed. And that's already had an incredible effect on the experience of parliament for these women. And, you know, the theory of change for this is that in creating a place where women can flourish in parliament, it's going to be a place where everybody can flourish. So in some of our check-ins, I've heard incredible insights into how women have worked together on really contested legislation across party lines, and were able to be positive and productive in a way that worked for both of them and their parties. And they say if they hadn't built the relationships or had the shared experience of the program, it would never have happened that way. So this is a highly ideologically divided community with competing priorities coming together to constructively discuss and make progress on a collective purpose. And they do that in a compassionate way because they've co-designed a space that allows them to be compassionate with themselves first and then with others. And just one last thing before I finish up, but we have so many participants who comment on how after the course, they now see people they previously regarded just as enemies, as humans, and humans that they deeply understand. And this really sets a new basis for the way they interact, even when they are in strong opposition about something ideological or policy-based. And I think it's that seeing humanity that's such a key part of creating conditions for compassion. Thanks, Jenna.
You're listening to Earth Matters, broadcast nationally across this continent via the Community Radio Network.
Chloe Spackman, CEO of Next 25 and the developer of Improving Democracy, Transforming Parliament for Women Leadership Program. She was online with the Women's Climate Conversation, and the topic was compassion and kindness in government. Let's hear the next part of that conversation.
I'm now going to turn to Kate. Now, Kate, you're the independent member for Curtin in Perth, and congratulations on your re-election for a second term. That's really good. But before your life in Parliament, you had a background in law, business, professional services and the community sector. And I know that you've had a long interest in improving public discourse because I first met you at a Next 25 workshop that Chloe and others were running some years ago before you even were elected to Parliament for the first time. And during your first term, you championed evidence-based policy based on reason debate. And you also were known to say that compassion was one of the characteristics that drove your initial campaign. And it's something that gives you great optimism. So the 48th Parliament's up and running. It's got a different composition to the previous Parliament, including many more women, many of whom are new to the job. Are you still optimistic? And reflecting on what Jennifer and Chloe have said, what are the opportunities for compassion and kindness to improve this Parliament going forward?
Thank you, Janet. Yeah, so I went into the last Parliament in a group of women. We're not part of the party system and we're put up by the communities. And that's been really interesting. And I think in that context, the government had a narrow margin. I think it was the first time 8 women had been sworn into Parliament all together at the same time. And it was a pretty powerful moment. We did have the ability to call out some of the bad behaviour and worked with the Speaker quite a lot on trying to improve question time. The first day when I sat in question time, I'd never watched an entire question time on telly even, and I had no idea it was going to be like that. So I was completely shocked and pretty quickly started working to improve it. Got the crossbench on both sides to come together and say what improvements could we make and put submissions to the manager of government business and opposition business and the speaker and the procedure committee. I heard from both sides things have been better since you guys have been here because we were calling out the behaviour, but also recognising that it needs to be a place for robust debate, but robust, respectful debate. So I and other crossbenchers really tried to change that by example, and it's hard to change a culture. And I think doing that by example has got to be part of the solution. Another thing that was different in that Parliament was the crossbench, an expanded crossbench, was actually focused on trying to improve the laws, not make the government fail. So it's different to an opposition role. And we actually, you know, wanted the government to make better laws. And so we're acting constructively. The crossbench successfully amended 20 bills in the last Parliament. And the opposition, I think, amended one bill. So we were able to have that change. Personally, it was all about building relationships. And as you say, bringing the humanity back. And I live with Allegra Spender and Monique Ryan, and we invited people over for dinner once a week from across the political spectrum to get to know them as humans who are sharing a similar weird job rather than, you know, where they came from ideologically. And I think that really helped to try and retain some humanity in that space. It was a pretty brutal election. I think it's a really hard process to go through, and I could tell you lots of dreadful stories about it. This Parliament, where there is a better gender balance, so that's great. There have been a few changes made to the crossbench. In some ways, because the government has a bigger majority, I think it may be harder for the crossbench to exert pressure on things like question time reform. But on the flip side, if you're optimistic, you might say maybe the government will feel braver about doing some things. So we'll see how that plays out. Truth in political advertising has been a big priority for me. Zali Steggall had done some work on it. I introduced 2 bills that contained a truth model, and the government did in fact introduce a bill. One thing I think will be interesting is with a female opposition leader, we'll see how that changes the tone. Hopefully it makes it more civil, but I also am concerned that that might be weaponised, and I don't want to, you know, things to be attributed to gender when they're not about that, they're about something else. So that's something that I'm nervous about. I think we should have civil debate for everyone, not just women, and it's not always about gender. So really we're focusing on improving the quality of the debate and the level of civility for everyone.
Okay. Just might quickly ask Chloe to just pick up on that point about gender and the reason that you thought it was important to work with the women in Parliament in your program.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have a very particular sort of a theory of change with our program. So it began with leadership, which is, as I mentioned, open to men and women, federal, state and territory MPs. And it starts with values-based leadership. But as part of that program to support them and network them across party lines, we do introduce our systems thinking and systems mapping and get them to think about, you know, a lot of them comment on not feeling a lot of agency in the ability to transform the system, which, as I mentioned, is really resilient and has a power sort of bigger than the sum of its parts. And so we get them to think about, well, within that system, what might you like to change? What's something you're passionate about that you've seen that you could work on that isn't ideological, that you could work with people across party lines? And that is how this program emerged. So it was four women, all alumna of leadership. So they met through that program. They did that program with men. And it was probably 3 to 4 years after they'd done the initial program that they came back to Next 25 and said, we've kept in touch. We have this community. All of us have experienced really challenging workplaces in Parliament as women, very different challenges they all had. And they had a difference of opinion on what the, you know, root issue was or what the biggest challenge was. But they shared that they knew the New South Wales election was coming up. They anticipated a lot more women would be coming into Parliament. And they thought they could improve the entire experience of Parliament if they could improve for women. So it was more like a lever, a way to unlock progress in Parliament. And in the co-design process, which went over probably about 6 months with those four women, we explored not naming the program anything about women or having it be everyone in Parliament, so including parliamentary staff as well. And it was really through their guidance and a bit of testing and thinking that they thought, just because of issues with trust and their knowledge of New South Wales Parliament, they felt starting just with women MPs was the best starting place to get them in a room together and have them start building connection and compassion for each other. So it's just about, for us, I suppose, that finding the lever for change.
Thanks, Chloe. So I might come back now to Jennifer and ask you, Jennifer, please, to tell us a little bit more about some of the things that you've been doing. You've mentioned before about you've got a civility pledge, you're doing some work on modernising the Parliament and some other things that you've been doing with your Compassion in Politics group in the UK.
Yeah, wonderful. And it's so lovely to hear about everyone else's work. And we're very aligned with what Chloe does. And we provide training in the Palace of Westminster as well to try and improve the capacity, because essentially people in that environment are largely in a fight or flight state, which means physiologically you can't even access the nuanced part of your brain, which is capable of cooperation and collaboration and nuanced thinking. And we also convene a group of women because, especially right now in the UK Parliament, we have 200 new members, and meeting and speaking to them, they've come in and they've gone, what on earth is this? I cannot believe it. You know, we have got an archaic patriarchal system that was founded on the idea that women shouldn't have power, and indeed anyone who wasn't a member of the aristocracy shouldn't have power. And it's been reformed on a piecemeal basis to try and provide democracy. And obviously we are very grateful to have democracy given what's happening in the world, but the way we do democracy is not fit for purpose. And I love the fact that Kate talked about question time. You know, one of the things that we're trying to do is get rid of that form of question time. I had a really lively argument with a government minister who said to me, well, you know, that's how I test ideas. You know, if we didn't have this rowdy debate at question time, I wouldn't know how people felt. And I said, well, if it's such an effective mechanism, then why doesn't every multinational and every other organization have a debating chamber instead of a boardroom? And I also think it feeds into public perception. You know, how are we perceived? I have so much respect for people like Kate who take public office, especially women and even more women of colour in the current environment. It's dangerous. It's absolutely dangerous. And many of the MPs we work with, over 100 MPs now, experience violence, threats of violence to their family, to their teams. And we know politicians who have been too scared to say their truth on the floor of the House for fear of what might happen to those that they love. And that is not a functional democracy. But if we want to change the culture, it can start with how the leaders speak to each other. And I'll just speak for the UK Parliament, although I know that there are many parallels. You know, having people shouting, jeering, booing, name-calling, laughing, harassing is not the best look for the rest of the public. And our polling shows that there's a lot of disrespect because of that. So some of our work is the easy wins. You know, how do we change the easy wins in how politics is done? But it's also how do we have that revolution that the parliamentary authorities want to change, but are actually completely resistant to change. So for those who want change, we have to go about it in different ways. And we work very similarly. I love what Chloe's doing, and gather together those MPs who want change. And we have launched something called the Civility Pledge, which was signed by 100 members of parliament, which is just essentially saying, however you're going to behave, this is how I'm going to behave. And our research shows that those who took that pledge had a different experience, because when you let go of the rope in a tug of war, the other side falls over. So you can begin individually and collectively as individuals to make that change. And just the final thing I wanted to mention was that we work with the Campaign to Reform Political Advertising in the UK and their goal of trying to prevent misrepresentation in political advertising. But we also think we need to go further, and we have a piece of legislation which has just been adopted by the Welsh Parliament, which would create an offence of deliberate political deception. We're not talking here about mistakes or rhetorical flourishes. We're talking about the deliberate deception that is knowingly enacted on the electorate.
Jennifer Nardell, co-founder and CEO with Compassion in Politics. And if you go to the Women's Climate Congress website at womensclimatecongress.com, you can access the video and audio of that entire Women's Climate Conversation. It's called Compassion and Kindness in Government. On the Earth Matters homepage are all the other links mentioned in this podcast, Compassion in Politics in the UK and Next 25. I'm your show host, Beck Horridge. See you next time.
You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environment Justice Program. If you missed any of today's show, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country. If you'd like to get in contact, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page. Thank you.